To discuss something related to Esther. This year, of course, given some of the troubling trends that we see in terms of the rise of anti-Semitism, I thought I would focus on three aspects of Esther's legacy with respect to anti-Semitism that I think really do have relevance in every generation, certainly including our own. The Gemara in Megillah and Daf Zayin says the following: Amar Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, Shalchalahem Esther lechachamim. Esther said to the rabbis of her generation, Kivauni ledoros. Why don't you establish a holiday for the events that occurred in my lifetime for all generations? So Shalchula, they responded to her by saying, Kina at meoreres aleinu levein haumos. That you're going to cause anti-Semitism, basically. If we're going to turn this day into a holiday, this day of Purim, then the result is going to be that the Jewish people will be accused of, as Rashi says, "Sheyomru ha'umos shanu smechem lahaskir mapalasan," that all the nations are going to say that we're, very happy to celebrate their downfall. So Esther's response is very striking because it doesn't seem to get to the heart of the issue. So she responds, "Shalchalahem kvar ksuva ani al divra hayamim lemalchei." Madai ufaras. I have already been written down. My story is already written down, basically in the secular history books. So, prima facie, if you're considering this response, you have to sort of think to yourself for a second and say, Esther's not really addressing the concern. Because what was the concern of the rabbis? The concern of the rabbis is if the Jews celebrate this, right, then it's going to be held against them. Whatever the other non-Jewish historians do is not going to have nearly the same impact. People aren't going to say that the Jews somehow are creating trouble. So,
but Megillah says celebrate.
Right. So again, this is before that's adopted. Then the next line in the Gemara is, in fact, that Esther wants to be written down as a Megillah. So, that was also a point of resistance. And they said, no, the story's already been told. It's already been told in the Chumash. It's already been told in the Navi Shmuel. We don't need this to be written down again. She prevailed in both cases. So the question really is, what was Esther saying? What was Esther's point? I mean, but why? It's not a convincing argument. It's a very poor argument, right? Because their argument is, if the Jews are going to celebrate this as a holiday, then everybody's going to say, you see, the Jews are celebrating the destruction, of their enemies. And that's going to generate anti-Semitism, legitimate concern. And Esther's response is, the story's already written down in the general histories of the era. How does that address the concern? Those aren't particularly Jewish histories. Those aren't Jewish people celebrating. So on its face, the rabbis would seem to, think about that response was really inadequate. But I'd like to suggest that perhaps what Esther had in mind was the following. If somebody is going to be anti-Semitic, they don't really need a reason to be. And what Esther says is that, look, if somebody has it out for the Jews, if somebody wants to target the Jews, then all they need is for the story to be written down, and then they can run with it. They can say whatever they want. So, you here, the rabbis, you're saying, and it's a legitimate concern, that you're concerned in terms of generating a response of anti-Semitism. And Esther's response is, anti-Semites don't need a reason to be anti-Semitic. I mean, if you think about the story, right, why did Haman decide to destroy all the Jews? Because one Jew crossed him, right? And, Va'ivez ve'inav lishloach yad b'mordechai levado, ki yigidulo es am mordechai, ve'yivakesh Haman lehashmides kol ha'yehudim, Asher b'choma chusa chashverosh am Mordechai. So Haman says, one Jew crossed me, that's it. I've got to kill all the Jews. I've got to kill babies. I've got to kill great-grandmothers. I've got to kill people who are totally assimilated, people who have never met or seen Mordechai in their life. It makes no sense. So Esther's first point, I think for all of us in terms of understanding anti-Semitism, is that it cannot be understood in rational terms. It cannot be understood in the sense of, this person is anti-Semitic because of X, Y, or Z. It's an irrational pathology. And what Esther is saying is that this story needs to be a story that's told for generations, and these days are days that need to be marked for generations. And if you, the rabbis, are concerned, and perhaps legitimately so, about anti-Semitism, unfortunately, anti-Semitism cannot be rationalized. It can't be, if we don't celebrate, they'll leave us alone. It hasn't worked that way. And I think this is a very important message. You know, very often people try to think of explanations. Mark Twain very famously tried to think of an explanation as to why people were anti-Semitic. We discussed it around the time of Parshas Vayigash, that it has to be because Yosef somehow cruelly enslaved the Egyptian people. And we spoke about how the Ramban very strongly disagrees with that. The Ramban says that Yosef was very kind, and the Psukim read, I think, much better according to the Ramban than they do according to Mark Twain, when the people say, Hachi Yisanu, Yosef, you've given us life. Yosef, who of course had been made to drink from the bitter chalice of slavery, refuses to enslave the Egyptians. He does buy the land. He does do the population transfers, Vesa'am Haviro Seldarim, Migvor Tetraim Ad Katseyu, but he never actually enslaves the people, and for that the people are very grateful. Point being, lesson number one that Esther is teaching us is that we cannot say if we do X or if we do Y, then they will or they won't be anti-Semitic. It doesn't work that way. My grandfather, Zichron Levracha, always used to say to me, when he was a little boy, the anti-Semites in Europe, where he was from, said the Jews don't belong in Europe. Get out of Europe. You don't belong here. You're foreign to here. Go to Israel. Go to Palestine, as it was called then. And then, of course, you know, in our generation, we hear certain voices saying that the Jews are occupying, of course, the land of Israel, and they belong back in Europe, wherever else they are, in the United States, or wherever else they say they belong, right? It's not really consistent. We cannot rationalize anti-Semitism. Lesson number one. Lesson number two really emerges from the fourth parak of the Megillah. And this is something that, unfortunately, is a lesson that we've learned. If we've learned it once, we've learned it 10 or 100 times. We know that Haman said about the Jewish people that they were mifuzar miforad bein hamim. They were scattered. They were not a unified or cohesive people. They were a people that in many respects was divided against themselves. And Esther, after Mordechai, helps her to understand, Umi yodeya im le'ez kazos higat l'malchus. Who knows? Maybe you're in this position for this very reason. You have to consider that very strongly. And Esther says that she's prepared to take action. And she says, Lech kenosis kol ha-yehudim hanim tzim b'shushan. Go and gather all of the Jewish people who are in Shushan. That is to say, make sure the Jews stand together, united as one in the face of this adversary. That is, there was some truth, unfortunately, in Haman's accusations. The Gemara says, Leisman diyada lishna bisha kehaman. There was nobody who knew how to say Lashon Hara like Haman. But Lashon Hara is not libel. It's not motzi shema. Very often it's true. Now, Haman used it for the most horrid of purposes, to try to bring an entire people, minar v'ad zakein, tafen hashim b'yom echad, to annihilation. But the bottom line is that the charge stung. And the charge stung because there was truth in it. The Jewish people were not united amongst ourselves. And Esther says, to combat anti-Semitism, leich kenosis kol ha'idim. You know, we can have all kinds of disputes, and important disputes, internally. But when it comes to what the Rav used to call klape chutz, right, outward-facing issues, we all have to stand together. And this is an extremely, extremely important lesson, and we relearned it in every single generation. When, of course, the Nazis came to power, and they first persecuted the Jews, and then they embarked on their own plan of annihilation, internal Jewish distinctions were not significant to them. They didn't care who was a chassid and who was a litvak, who was an Eastern European Jew and who was a Western European Jew, who was a religious Jew and who was an agnostic, atheist, or anti-religious Jew. It was very insignificant from their point of view. They didn't even follow halachic rules about, let's say, who was Jewish. At the Wannsee Conference, they developed their own protocols, how to figure out who's Jewish. They had their own rating system in terms of a Jewish grandparent or two Jewish great-grandparents. They followed their own protocol. Leich kenosis kol ha-yudim means that in the eternal battle against anti-Semitism, milchama la-Hashem ba-malek mi-dor-dor, as Rav Moshe Soloveitchik understood it, meaning that anybody who rises up to destroy the Jewish people, in a certain sense, embodies that quality of Amalek. So we need to all stand together. And even very significant disagreements that we have internally about matters of Jewish law, about matters of Jewish tradition, even about matters of Jewish theology, even about things as significant, and I don't mean to minimize them, as the divinity of the Torah, of the validity and the applicability of halacha, things that are very much kihem chayinu ve'orech chameinu. Nevertheless, when we're faced with a significant external threat, leich kenos es kol ha'yehudim, that is one of Esther's messages. And that, of course, should resonate very deeply with us here in the United States of America in 2020. As you've heard me say before, obviously the Tree of Life congregation in Squirrel Hill in Pittsburgh was perhaps a Reform congregation, maybe the best way to describe it. The Chabad out in Poway, outside of San Diego, is a Chabad congregation. I gathered from the news reports that most of the people there were not ritually observant individuals. The community in Jersey City that was attacked was a community of Hasidic extraction. The community in Muncie that was attacked was a community of a different Hasidic extraction. The point is, if you look at the anti-Semitism that has gone on in the United States, it clearly has made no difference to those who would assault Jewish institutions and Jewish people in them and seek to kill as many as possible. It really makes no difference whatsoever from their point of view what kind of Jew it is. It wasn't like, you know, people in Jersey City were going around saying, I'm looking to kill a Belzer Chassid. You know, a Satmar, I'm not interested in killing them. Or somebody's going around saying out to the Young Israel of Greater Miami, where somebody was shot, thank God he survived. It's exactly the shul room, the town where my grandmother, should be well, lives. He wasn't saying, you know, I'm going to go hunt down a modern Orthodox Jew. That's why I'm going to the Young Israel. I promise you, it doesn't work that way. Aleich kenosis kol hayudim, we have to stand together, united as one. So again, the first, I think, major lesson that Esther teaches us based on the Gemara and Megillah, Daf Zion, is that if somebody's going to be an anti-Semite, it's not going to be because we're celebrating or we're not celebrating. Of course, we don't need to be foolish, but at the same time, we cannot rationalize anti-Semitism. Point number two, as we said, leich kenosis kol hayudim. The need for Jewish people to stand fully united in the face who seek our destruction is absolutely critical. We have internal disagreements. We have very important points of departure. And there are very significant issues that we cannot agree upon internally. But when it comes to confronting anti-Semitism, there really can be no excuse for any tension or any division whatsoever. And that brings me to the third lesson from Esther that I wanted to focus on tonight. And as much as it's important for us to stand united and unified, cohesive in the face of anti-Semitism, the idea of leich kenosis kol ha'yehudim, hanim tzi'im b'shushan, in responding to mifuzar and mifurad, that does not mean that somehow everybody is going to take an equal share. And the third great lesson of the story of Esther is that fighting anti-Semitism requires enormous personal risk on the part of individuals. It's not easy work. It's not just as simple as everybody's going to go to the same rally. But as Esther says to Mordechai, V'chasher avadati, avadati. Esther was prepared, if need be, to sacrifice her life to save her people. She had no idea whether or not Achashverosh was going to extend the Sharvit HaZahav. In fact, the Gemara says he didn't want to, but a malach came and pushed it down. It's the Gemara's way of saying that itself was a miracle. The Gemara in addition says that Esther was trying to lead Achashverosh to the conclusion that she was involved in some kind of a relationship with Haman to get him jealous. And of course, he would then kill Haman and her as well. But v'chasher avadati avadati, if she had to die to save her people, she was prepared to do so. Yes, we all have to stand united, but certain people, perhaps, who find themselves in positions of influence, as Esther did find herself, she didn't ask to go to the palace, but as Mordechai said to her, "Umi odeya imo es kazos," he got the malchus. Certain people will have to rise to the occasion. Certain people are going to have to be prepared to pay very, very serious consequences for a triumph over anti-Semitism. It cannot be easy. People sitting in this room surely remember the Soviet Union. The fall of the Soviet Union was a complex matter, to be sure, but a major crack in the armor of the Soviet Union, of course, was what went on with respect to American Jews protesting on behalf of their brethren in the Soviet Union. And American Jews, to their great credit, got together at rallies. I'm sure many of you attended rallies of the struggle for Soviet Jewry. Again, this was a cause that really did unite the American Jewish community. Let my people go. And there was enormous pressure that was brought to bear on the government of the Soviet Union. People here may remember the Jackson-Vanik Amendment. People here may remember the idea that the Soviet Union was actually in need of grain, importing grain from the United States, and that was tied to allowing Jews who wished to emigrate from the Soviet Union. And that is all important, and that was really all essential. But I think we can all, sitting in this room, agree that the price that was paid by American Jews in terms of protesting, in terms of rallying, in terms of lobbying, whatever costs associated with that were, could not possibly compare to the courage of people like Sharansky and those who literally sat in the gulag in solitary confinement, torture, interrogation, to be able to face down what Ronald Reagan famously called the evil empire. It took enormous personal sacrifice. People gave their lives, and those who lived gave many years of their lives to help bring down this terrible, evil dictatorship, to allow Jewish people, of course, to leave the Soviet Union, to come to the United States, to come to Israel, where there are currently over a million Jews in the former Soviet Union. And this is something that I think is extremely important for us to understand. Fighting anti-Semitism is not always pretty. It's not always you go to a rally and then everything starts breaking your way. V'chasher avadati, avadati means that people have to be prepared to make enormous sacrifices. Fighting anti-Semitism is not always so popular, and it's certainly not always so easy. And the story of Esther is really the story of enormous personal courage. Now, Esther, of course, lives to tell the story, but she wants that to be written down. She says to the rabbis of her generation, these days need to be remembered, and this story needs to become part of the biblical canon, part of the tradition. Kiva'uni l'doros, kitvuni l'doros. People who find themselves, let's say, on the conservative side of the political aisle, it takes courage for them to be able to stand up and to say white nationalism is not acceptable. People who find themselves on the left side of the political aisle have to stand up against people who spew this kind of terrible anti-Israel rhetoric. I was reminded of this just a week ago when one of the leading presidential candidates from the Democratic field said that AIPAC was a forum for bigotry or giving a platform for bigotry. That's only, marginally better. People in this room remember 1975. You know, there was a time when the General Assembly of the United Nations passed a resolution that's saying that Zionism was racism. So you're saying AIPAC isn't bigotry itself. It's a platform for bigotry. I guess that's half a step better. But, especially people who do identify as Democrats or as progressives need to denounce this, just as people who identify as Republicans or conservatives need to denounce white nationalism and to say, we have no truck with these people in Charlottesville chasing, holding torches and marching Jews will not replace us. It's not always popular because you have to stand up against people from your own camp, so to speak, politically. But that's part of Esther's message to us as well, that we have to be very courageous. V'chasher avadati avadati. We have to be prepared to pay a price in the fight against anti-Semitism. And anti-Semitism, let's remember, does not only come from one place. Again, to go back to the attacks that we've seen here, Pittsburgh and Poway are basically skinheads, white nationalists. The attack in Jersey City came from people of a different stripe altogether. I think they call themselves like the Black Hebrews or some group of that nature. The attack in Muncie may have been some kind of, a mentally ill individual, nothing associated with, any political movement. The point is that the anti-Semitism that we're experiencing is not coming from only one source. And people have to be prepared to fight it, and people have to be prepared to denounce it, no matter what their own persuasions are. And so to review again, I think Esther gives us three really critical lessons to reflect on in the 21st century, in 2020, as we confront anti-Semitism anew as a Jewish community. Point number one is people don't need a reason to be anti-Semitic. People find their own reasons to be anti-Semitic. And plenty of the greatest anti-Semites in history had plenty of reason not to be anti-Semitic. Jews who had taken care of them, Jews who had done for them. If we go back to the first instance of national oppression of the Jews, it happened, of course, in the land of Egypt. Yosef had saved the Egyptian people from ruin and destruction. If there was anybody to whom they owed something, it would have been Yosef and Yosef's descendants. And the pasuk says, "Vayakum el chadash al Mitzrayim asher lo yada as Yosef." He either didn't know Yosef, he didn't want to know Yosef. So again, we cannot rationalize anti-Semitism and say it's a Jew made fun of this kid in sixth grade and he grew up to be an anti-Semite. There could have been 10 other Jews who were very nice to him. And again, we have the same thing with Haman. You know, one Jew, Mordechai Hayudi, doesn't bow down to him, and somehow he decides to destroy Jews in 127 provinces, millions of people who have never met Mordechai and who have nothing to do with him whatsoever. Point number one. Point number two, as we said, Leich Kenos es Kol Hayudim. The need for Jewish unity in the face of terrible anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism seeks to destroy the Jewish people without any regard for Ashkenazic, Sephardic, Hasidic or Litvak, observant, non-observant, Orthodox, conservative, Reform, Reconstructionist, you know, whatever it is, post-denominational. We need to stand together as one, klape chutz. So that has always been the history of anti-Semitism, and that will continue to very much be the case. And then third, what I call the lesson of v'chasher avadati avadati. Yes, we all need to stand together. Yes, everybody has some degree of responsibility, but it does require enormous personal courage. The burden is, to put it bluntly, not carried equally. We cannot compare those who rallied on behalf of Soviet Jews with those who were prepared to sit in the gulag, to undergo torture, interrogation at the hands of the brutal KGB. These people, of course, had to carry more than their share of the burden in a fight against anti-Semitism, and it will always require courage. People will need moral courage. People will need physical courage to be able to stand up and to denounce anti-Semitism no matter where it comes from. And again, as I mentioned just a moment ago, I do believe people have a specific responsibility to denounce anti-Semitism, especially from within their own camp. Again, if a person were a Democrat, hear Democratic voices speaking in anti-Semitic tones, they need to denounce that. A person's a Republican, you see people on the right-wing nationalist fringe, they have a special responsibility to denounce that. Say, we again put these people outside of the camp. I think these are three timeless lessons from Esther's life in the book of Esther, Kiva'uni Ledoros, Kitvuni Ledoros, that continue to be relevant and resonant even in our own generation.